Ryan Rashog joins us. Shogger, I got a text from an AHL coach who jokingly said Woodcroft used to run different lines in the morning skate, then in warm-up, and then have different line combinations when the game started. So he's like, don't be surprised if what you saw today would be different. Although, did he not say Drysdale and McDavid would play together, or did he just say they were dominant together?
Oh, I think he said look forward to seeing them something, too, I thought he said. I mean, but it's a great point, though, because the one thing I'll say about Jay Woodcroft is that he thinks a lot, maybe to the point of overthinking certain things, certain details. So could I see him throwing a head fake with lines in a morning skate? Maybe. Could I see him head faking with, you know, messed up lines in a warm-up? Maybe. Could I see him standing there and flat-out lying to us? I'm not sure that he'll do that. And he did talk pretty definitively about it today. The other thing, too, is I think you have to be careful about the message you send to your players, right?
Yeah.
Hey, guys, let's be real tricky and secretive here. Hey, guys, it's like you have Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. Quit screwing around. Put them on the ice more and let them go win the game. I mean, really, when you have the two guys he has, why would you mess around with stupid little games like that? So I think they're going to start together. I think they're going to play most of the game together. I think they're going to play 22 or 23 minutes each if it's a close game. And I think that's the way it should be because I think it was a mistake not playing a more lap game.
What about the 11-7, 12-6? What do you think about that possibility?
I think he's going to go 12-6, I think. You know, he was asked about Philip Broberg yesterday, and he said they're bringing him in as insurance. Now, could I see him using that verbiage because it's misdirection? Yes. This is the thing. I believe the Oilers scrape for every bit of intel they can get on the LA Kings. And I think it's been a frustration for them because the way this series has gone, there's been very little intel on the LA Kings. The LA Kings don't post their media availabilities online. If the Oilers want to know what Todd McLellan said today, they basically have no way of finding that out because it's not posted anywhere. And I think that's been a bit of a piss off for them. Because I think they pay attention to that stuff. So if you listen to the last answer of Jay Woodcroft's media availability today, guys, he talked about that very thing. The only people out there, because the Kings practice at a different facility. There's no media out there. We don't have time to cover the Kings skate and get back in time for the Oilers skate. And as Woodcroft pointed out today, the only people that are out there covering LA are people who work for the team, which isn't entirely true. But it was a very pointed comment that he made, kind of griping about the fact that, you know, there's not a lot of information coming out of there.
Is that a major issue? Like, do you feel that the Kings are really being sneaky, or is it more of the Oilers and how they aren't playing that is kind of like that's where they're at?
Well, I mean, they can both be true at the same time. I mean, there's lots the Oilers aren't doing right, and they are where they are. It's their own fault. Are the LA Kings being a little bit sneaky? Yeah, I think they are. I think purposely they're not posting their media availabilities on their website. It's been that way since the start of the series. I've tried to go and listen to Todd McLellan because I want to know what he said today because I'm a reporter covering the series and I can't find it anywhere. So is there a little bit of game playing going on? Yes. Is Jay Woodcroft right in the middle of it? And has he been from the start? Yeah. He was the first one that started talking about Kopitar's ice time after game one, if you recall.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting when I look at it. I guess what the guy is saying, but I just don't see that as a coach I really care what he says, especially when I look at the Oilers' last two games. Like,
yeah,
I don't think that the Kings have been really doing anything too special. So I'm like, guys, this is about us. Like, I think Woodcroft tonight, it's all about his group, his players. And I said earlier, Shogren, I want to get your opinion. I believe the Oilers have a massive opportunity to rewrite their story tonight and Saturday night by winning it. Because the story, most people have it already written out. Same old failure, same problems, GM, coach, the leaders of the group, not enough depth. Like, it's the same. It's a tired one. But I think they have a chance to change it tonight. Is that being overdramatic for this group?
It's not. But this is what I'll throw right back at you, Struds. You know when else they had a time to rewrite their story? The first period of game four. And then you know when else when they had a chance to rewrite their own story? The first period of Game 5. And then you know when else? The first shift of overtime in Game 5. It's not like this team hasn't been presented with opportunities to change the narrative, and it hasn't been sitting right there for them to do that exact thing. So does it come to a crescendo tonight because they're done if they screw it up again? Yes. Is there more pressure and is it a bigger moment by their own doing? Yes. But, you know, they've had opportunities to create this moment for themselves and they haven't been mature enough to do it. I have no idea what to expect from this team tonight. No idea. And I think anybody that says they do is lying to themselves.
What's interesting to me is in the regular season when you'd ask Woodcroft about the other team, he's like, we only focus on what we do. So now you're trying to worry about what the other team does. It's that isn't necessarily the best thing because the Oilers, to me, there's two things that have happened here. Their 5-on-5 play has been terrible. The last two games has been awful. Their lack of will and desire, their defense core combined had 6 hits last game, and Brent Kulak had 4 of them in a playoff game. In Game 4, they had 7, and CeCe had 4 of them. They had 4 defensemen with 0 hits last game against a team who had the puck more than you. Like, the Edmonton Oilers' desire, I don't care what the LA Kings do, if the Oilers' desire and will isn't heightened tonight, they're not winning.
I agree. This LA team, for whatever reason, they're inexperienced in a lot of ways, you know, but they have figured out a formula for besting the Oilers, and it involves, you know, being physical and finishing checks and being tenacious and being smart in their own zone. And the other thing it involves, getting the jump and playing the game with the lead. LA plays a way different game when they have the lead, and they can play a different game when they have the lead. And so that's why, you guys, the magic key in all of this is getting off to a good start, getting the first goal, and getting LA out of their zone. When you make the LA Kings try and come from behind, it puts them out of their comfort zone and out of their wheelhouse. So a good start is absolutely critical. And that's why I believe if you look at McDavid and Draisaitl and what they did when they were together for a short period of time, it was one of the most effective and dangerous looks that the team has had all series. And getting off to a good start is basically their biggest problem. So why wouldn't you throw your most effective weapon at your most significant problem and just challenge those guys to go out there and fix it? And if you're Jay Woodcroft, guys, and you're losing this game tonight, you're losing with your superstars playing a crap ton. What you cannot do in Jay Woodcroft's world is lose this game tonight with McDavid and Draisaitl at 19 minutes and 55 seconds. That cannot happen.
So this is what I'm doing. You're joined by Ryan Rashog, and I want your thoughts. I'm watching. I put everyone out the first 4 shifts, and the guys with their jump, they go right back out there. I don't care who it is. Now, it's a little different with Connor and Leon, but the other 3 lines. So let's say you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, and of the other 3 lines, whoever went out the most, I go 1, 3, 1, 3. You know what I mean? Like, get them out there so everyone's on notice. If you're not doing what we want you to, you're not getting out there. And you know, it's a bit aggressive, but it sends a message. And if you're not buzzing, you're not playing.
Yeah, Struds, and I think he'll be more aggressive. I think he'll go McDavid and Draisaitl, then he'll go to the second line, and I think he'll go right back to McDavid and Draisaitl looking for a mismatch if it's an on the fly change. So if there aren't whistles, because LA can obviously just counter with last change, but I could see him, because he's done that a few times. We've seen him do that, where he'll go back to his, you know, the McDavid line right after the second line gets out there. So I think we could see, like I said, McDavid, Draisaitl, then Nugent Hopkins goes, and then right back to McDavid and Draisaitl. I could see him playing that line 3 of the first 7 shifts of the game in an effort to fix this ridiculous mess they've gotten themselves into. And I don't think he's going to be too concerned about how much ice time that fourth line gets. And I think if it's the life of a fourth liner. You can't sit there and get your first shift at the 9-minute mark and go, well, I wasn't into it. You got to get us all out there right away or we're not in. Nope. That's your lot in life. You're not asked to dangle and you're not asked to score and you're asked to be ready to go play hard when it's your turn. And it might not be your turn very often. So this idea that you got to get everybody in right away, roll your big guns out there to make sure you get off to a better start. And then when you need those guys, use them. And if they're not going, sit them.
But I think that's the thing, though. If a fourth line has a great shift, you have to reward that. Because it doesn't mean the second and third line are both going, right? And I know it's hard to keep a 25-goal scorer like Kane off the ice. Like, don't get me wrong. But he has to identify who is going early and get them going out there early.
Yeah, I take your point on that, for sure. And so I agree with you on that, Steph.
Yeah, I'm not saying that they're going to roll all four lines all the time. But as soon as someone shows they're in or they're out of the effort game or the compete game, you find them a spot on to play. And I think that message has to be driven home very quickly, because they're proud guys and everyone in that room wants to be part of the solution tonight. And if they're not playing like it, then I don't think I would play them. Like, it's not really that. The D are a little different because there's six of them, you know, and it's a little bit different with them. But up front, man, they got to get it on that forecheck hard.
But where's the line, though, Strugs? Where's the line? And I'm not arguing with you because I agree with you, but this is what I'd say. You run the risk of, you know, you bring a game plan to the table. And I think if the players know that's the plan ahead of time, then if your lines go into a blender because some guys are on and some guys aren't, then I think you're okay. If you tell the players ahead of time, hey, be on it early tonight, or because we're going with the guys who are going.
Sure.
If they know that, if you're 4 minutes into a game and all of your line changes are now in a blender, I just think, you know, where are you overhandling it? You know, there's a point where we would criticize a guy for, holy smokes, no rhythm. He didn't give his team a chance to get into any sort of rhythm.
Right, but it's not, I'm not talking about blending the whole lines, but let's say Kasten has a great first shift. Find him a time. Maybe, you know, someone like, probably not Hyman, but he bumps up and get him in there, right? Just say, hey, this guy's playing well. We got him a spot. So like, the first line's not changed. I mean, you could drop out Yamamoto for a Kasten. I mean, you keep your core guys together, but some have got to get going.
Here's what I would do, though. I would start the game with McDavid, Draisaitl, and I would put Josh Archibald on in the first shift. The Edmonton Oilers have been dog you know what on the first shifts of games. Get a guy. You have your two best players. Get a guy with some energy out there and see if that sparks your team. Because to me, Archibald had 10 hits last game. Yeah. The defense corps had sixth by themselves. He was on for the only two kind of quasi-scoring chances they had in the first period. I'm talking one shift. Like, I find too often they set the tone. And skill player, Adam Oates talked about this, skill players sometimes like to feel their way into games. They like to see what's going on. Right?
Yeah.
So switch it up sometimes. Shock the system a little bit. It can't always be 29-97, 29-97. Tampa Bay won. How many times did they start the Goudreau, Gord, Coleman line? A lot. Because they're like, these guys are getting us into the game. And so sometimes, to me, you want to empower other people on your lineup. And so that's something I would look at. And I'd still strongly consider going seven defensemen. I'm not sold that they have six guys. That the way that, you know, Bouchard and Keith have struggled the last two games. It's not like Barry's been, look at his ice time. They're not trusting him a ton. Now you're throwing in Chris Russell. Like, are you going to play Kulak and CeCe 30 minutes? Like, I wonder if you go with 7 and 11, because then that guarantees you can automatically play one of Draisaitl and McDavid on your fourth line all the time and keep guys rolling.
Yeah, and they may. I mean, at the run through today, what they did is they had Devin Shore skating as a defenseman on the line rushes next to Philip Broberg. Generally, if they're going to go seven defensemen, that extra defenseman will at least rotate a couple times through with one of the regular defensemen. Mm-hmm. And Broberg did. He took all the run-throughs with Devin Shore next to him. Now, these are little signs that we pay attention to. They may or may not actually tell us the real tale. My gut is that it's going to be 12 and 6 tonight. But, you know, you may be onto something there, Gregs. But, Strud, I definitely take your point. If players are sending you a message early on, whatever that message is, receive it. If I were Jay Woodcroft and I had floaters in the first period, I'd be livid. If anybody comes out tonight and isn't on it, I would be livid. There's absolutely no excuse for anybody to start this game tonight. And, I mean, sure, if you're nervous, it's one thing. If your hands are, you know, whatever. But if your motor isn't going, I mean, if you can't get up for that first period, then you don't belong. So if players send you a message early, receive it, listen to it, and adjust to it. So I definitely agree with your point there.
Shogger, enjoy the pregame meal. We will talk to you after the game.
The pregame meal?
No.
It's a quality ice cream station here in L.A. I will say geez. That. Oh, high-quality ice cream station.
Oh, I
lots
know.
Lots of various – if you check my Twitter feed, you'll see a picture I tweeted before the last game here of the ice cream I had, off the charts.